Hey, what is up? Welcome to this Featured Friday episode of the Wantrepreneur to Entrepreneur podcast. As always, I'm your host, Brian Lofermento, and I'm not the only Brian on today's episode. I am so excited. You all are in for such a huge treat because I've got an incredible guest on today's episode. His name is Brian Clayton. This guy has been there and done that, and as he will be the first person to tell you, he's made 100 million mistakes, but he's also made 100 million successes. We're going to dive into his story. He's the CEO and co-founder of GreenPal, which is an online marketplace that connects homeowners with local lawn care professionals. GreenPal has been called the Uber for lawn care by Entrepreneur Magazine and has over 100,000 active users completing thousands of transactions per day. Before he even started GreenPal, if you're thinking, holy cow, what a success there, Brian also founded Peachtree Incorporated, which had a $10 million annual revenue before it was acquired in 2013. I'm so excited for you to hear from and learn from Brian. So without further ado, let's dive into my interview with Brian Clayton. Dude, you heard your intro, man. How are you doing today?
Dude, that was an awesome intro. I think I might have just stumbled on something. 100 million mistakes and $100 million of lawn mowing services. So I'll take it.
I love it. Love it. Brian, so fill in the gaps. Obviously, you're way more than just your bio. Tell us about Brian Clayton, the guy.
Yeah, so currently, I'm CEO, co-founder of a company called GreenPal. So GreenPal is like the Uber for lawn mowing. So you need to get your grass cut rather than calling around on Craigslist or Yelp. You can just use the app and somebody will come out and mow the yard the same day or the next day. Been at this business for 8 years. We're an 8-year overnight success. The first few years were really tough getting this marketplace going. But now we have several hundred thousand people using the app to get their lawn mowed and doing over $20 million a year in revenue all through grass cutting. And so I guess you could say we're an 8-year overnight success.
Before
GreenPal, I actually had a landscaping company, like you mentioned. I started cutting grass in high school as a way to make extra money and stuck with that little lawn mowing business all through high school, all through college. And then when I graduated college, I made a little business plan and over a 15-year period of time, built it to one of the largest landscaping companies in the state of Tennessee where I live. And in 2013, that business was acquired by one of the largest landscaping outfits in the United States. So growing that business, just me and a push mower to me and 150 people, I learned a lot the hard way about how to build and scale a business. And then kind of had to reinvent myself when I started GreenPal.
Yes, so much that I want to dive into, Brian. But let's start. Before we get into GreenPal, I really want to start with your humblest of beginnings, you and a push cart mower. What is the difference? How come so many people go from just being lawn mowers making 10 bucks an hour to you actually successfully scaling it? What's the difference there?
I think, you know, to look at business, you can look at business like a video game almost. You can like break it down into 10 levels, whatever. I think Super Mario World was 10 levels. So if you look at business that way and you're willing to take it one level at a time and not get worried about the things that don't matter and just progress through each level, do whatever it takes to get through that level onto the next level. You know, that's how you can kind of break it down and build a real business. Because the reality is most people that are in business are just self-employed. And they stay self-employed because they don't think about systems and processes. They don't work on the business. And if you can like just work your way through one level and build an actual business around what it is you're trying to do, you know, it doesn't matter if it's grass cutting or whatever it is, you can build a big business. And it's one thing that's made sense for me 20 years in entrepreneurship. When I started that lawn mowing company, it was just me and a push mower. And then I hired my first employee in year two. And then I just kept at it, figured out what worked, what didn't work. And then by the time I was year five, I might've had 50 people working for the company. And then in year 15, there was 150 plus people there and doing $10 million a year in revenue. And like looking at the 15 years of that business and the 8 years of GreenPal, it really just boils down to just focusing on the two or three things that matter, improving them, and then rinse and repeat and just work your way through the metaphorical levels to build an actual company.
Yeah, and I love that you said the things that matter, because way too often entrepreneurs get stuck on the things that don't matter. I mean, I've met entrepreneurs who have like the world's sickest business cards, but then they don't have a product or service just yet. It's like, what are they focusing on? Talk to us about some of those things that matter.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, how many of those mistakes that I've made over the years? And to your point about the business card, when we launched GreenPal, we spent way too long on like things that like the brand and the color scheme and the mood and all of these things. Like we literally spent a month designing the brand mascot. His name's Gary. And I mean, he looks great, but we spent a month on this guy when we had like 10 customers. So to your point, you really just have to look at like what the hell it is you're trying to do. What are the two or three things you can move the needle on? And then what is inside your little circle of influence that you can act in to get yourself closer to that goal? One of my favorite books is 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Dr. Stephen Covey. And what he talks about in that book is we all have this circle of concern. And so, you know, that could be, you know, what does the brand look like? Should I do TikTok ads? How am I going to get to $10 million even though I'm only doing $100,000? Like, this is in your circle of concern. And it's all this stuff that you can like obsess over and think about that really doesn't matter. All that matters is your circle of influence, which is inside of that circle. And it's much, much, much smaller. But inside of that circle of influence are things that you can do. So in the early days, that might be like writing blog posts, talking to customers, trying to learn how to code, figuring out what your marketing strategy is going to be, and like focusing on what you can learn about that, and just little things inside of your circle of influence. And as you act inside of that little circle, it grows and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and then you can do more things. But you have to act small. Like, entrepreneurship is full of all of these like paradoxes and dichotomies, and one of them that I love is, it's like, have this huge ambition. It might be you want to build an 8-9-figure company, billion-dollar company, huge ambition. But you also have to think and act small. And so if you're willing to do that, act small over and over and over again for months and years, you can then build something.
I love that perspective for so many reasons, Brian. And one of the core things that I took away from that answer is a firm belief of control what you can control. None of us can snap our fingers and have a $100 million business overnight. So since you can't control that, just control the things that you can control. I love hearing that. I want to address something that has got me really excited. And I've had this date eyed on my calendar for a long time, because part of your bio is that you started the Uber of lawn caring services. And we hear it way too frequently from entrepreneurs. I'm going to start the Uber of this. I'm going to start the Uber of that. Whereas you've actually gone ahead and done it. Because to me, the Uber of Uber is the fact that it has so many users. It has so many drivers. And that's where most people drop the ball. When you set out to start GreenPal, what were you envisioning it becoming?
You know, I also have had that degree of naivete when I started the Uber for lawn mowing. I literally, my two co-founders and I thought that all we needed to do was just pay somebody to build the app, and we would market it a little bit. We'd be off and going. We would have the Uber for lawn mowing. And the first year was really, really tough. We didn't really understand. I thought, you know, I'm just coming off of 15 years of business, you know, had a good exit, and I didn't really understand the difference between running a traditional business and then inventing a brand new product from scratch. And I didn't understand how difficult it is to build something brand new that does not yet exist. And so that was something that I was confronted with in the early days, which is why most Uber for X companies don't exist, don't make it, because you're inventing a brand new product, a brand new user behavior, a brand new marketplace. And so for us, you know, the first year, 2-3 years was really difficult. And the way we got through that was just really, really, really small things that we could do, small goals. And then we would try to learn from the activity that was happening on the app and then apply that to try to double the number. And so at the time we were reading a book called The Startup Owner's Manual by an author named Steve Blank. And if you've ever heard of like the Lean Startup, this is the mentor to the guy that wrote the Lean Startup. And so one thing that book talks about is is when you're inventing a brand new product, you're trying to search for this product market fit. And the only way that you can know what the hell it is you're doing is just to talk to as many users and customers as you can. And when we launched our first app, it was crickets. There was nobody using it. So we're reading this book and we're like, well, we need to talk to customers. We need to talk to users. Well, we don't have any. Well, shoot, we need to go get some. Like, how are we going to get some? Well, we could pass out, I don't know, we can pass out door hangers, flyers. And we that was the first thing we did. We passed out something like 100 to 200,000 door hangers all over Nashville, Tennessee, because not because we were trying to make a bunch of money, but because we knew we needed 100 people to use this damn thing. And if we could talk to those people, then we could learn about what it was we were trying to do, what our value proposition was. Were we even on the right track? Was this something that people would pay for or continue to pay for? All these questions that we had that we were operating on assumptions. It was only through like those customer interviews and doing what we had to do to get those customers were we able to get to the next level of the video game.
Dang, Brian, every single listener needs to go back and listen to that one answer, because this is something I hear so frequently. When you listen to entrepreneurial advice, when you listen to marketing advice, it is so often, go talk to your customers. And that, you just addressed the elephant in the room that most gurus aren't willing to go there, which is, well, what about for all the beginners? And this is the Wantrepreneur to Entrepreneur show. A lot of them don't have customers. So you all just heard how scrappy Brian was, handing out pamphlets, not running Facebook ads, not trying to find strategic partners, not guest blogging on a million different websites. He handed out pamphlets. And Brian, take us back to those days, because I'm sure that you guys were facing the issue of the chicken or the egg. Do you get users? Do you get lawn mowers to be on the app? How did you address the chicken and the egg to get some traction?
So one of the hardest things about building a marketplace is that you have that chicken and egg problem. You know, if you don't have suppliers, and then customers come, you can't service them. And then if you get suppliers and there's no customers, it's like an empty room. It's like going to a nightclub and nobody's there. Like, it's like, okay, well, I'm leaving. And that's exactly what happens if you don't get both people on the marketplace kind of at the same time. And so going back to our playbook, it was just, well, we only need 100, 200, 300 homeowners to try this thing, and we only need 10 or 12 lawn care services, and let's just do that, and then let's try to spark those interactions, and then let's try to figure out what we need to build to make it run smoothly. And we knew it didn't matter if we couldn't get 10,000 homeowners if we couldn't make it work for 100, and that's what we did. And so We got the first couple hundred homeowners by passing out door flyers, door hangers, and I got bit by a dog two times, and we realized real quick this is not a scalable user acquisition strategy, but we needed people to try the damn thing. And then for service providers, we would cold call them off Craigslist, and we realized that the only time we could get them on the phone was on Sunday afternoons. And so every week, Sunday afternoons, my co-founder and I would just come in the office and we would just grind out hundreds of phone calls, text messages, trying to get these folks to talk to us. And then we would pitch them on the idea of what we were building, because at the time, the app really sucked. And, you know, the whole time we've been self-funded. And so it's not like we had a big, huge amount of resources to pay a dev team. The app really stunk. But we would pitch them on the idea, and we would gauge their interests. And one thing that I was able to do to close the gap between crappy app and needing vendors to use it was I would offer them free coaching, free mentoring to grow their lawn mowing business. And you know, in Nashville, I was kind of a known commodity in the lawn mowing business because I had sold an eight-figure company. And if you're in the lawn mowing business in Nashville, you knew who I was. And so these people couldn't believe a lot of times it was me. They were like, is this really you? And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm here and this is my new app and I need you to use it. And so that didn't make things easy, but it made it possible that we could kind of have these service providers on the shelf for a limited number of weeks or months to then work on the consumer side. And we knew we could kind of spoof the vendor side for a little while until we figured out the consumer side. And then we would ping pong back and forth on the problems that both sides were facing and just make them better and better and better.
I love that. And again, it speaks a lot to your scrappiness. One thing that I do want to dive into, because I've been in the entrepreneurial game for more than a decade as well. You obviously have years and years and years of experience in this. And one of the biggest things, one of the biggest differences that I see between entrepreneurs and wantrepreneurs is us as entrepreneurs, we know that whatever the heck we think our path is, whatever the heck we think it's going to turn out as, it's going to take 50 hairpin turns to get there. And we're just open to that. I'm curious to hear for either of your two businesses that we're talking about here today or anything that you've done, how did it turn out differently? How did you just willingly just adjust on a dime and went in a different direction?
Yeah. You know, I've always been surprised by building GreenPal because I spent 15 years in the industry, you know, building an 8-figure company in the landscaping business. I thought I knew everything about it. I thought I knew how it worked at its core. And a lot of assumptions I had came out to be true. I knew the app would work. I knew homeowners needed a way to book a lawn mowing service easily. But one thing that's really surprised me was just how hard it was to get vendors and service providers to adhere to a fixed schedule, to send out a free quote when they had the opportunity to do it, to just engage with it. Like, we're literally driving them revenue, and you would think that'd be a no-brainer. You would think you'd have thousands of these folks beating down your door, but that's not what happened. And I quickly learned and quickly came to understand is, like, it's a pain in the ass to go get a lawn mowing service to come mow your yard every 2 weeks for $32. And it's hard to get them to show up on time, and it's hard for them to do a good job consistently. And I basically came to understand, like, all the frustrations that homeowners deal with were now our problems. And I didn't really understand that that was going to be the case. I thought we could build an app and we could just solve it all magically. But no, it was like, no, the reason why it sucks is now your problem. And now you have to build the technology to solve every one of those problems. And that was a surprising thing. And so year one, you know, here we think we're going to be building all of these consumer-facing features, but no, year one was like a set of features to just make sure the guy shows up on the day he's supposed to. And we had to build a feature set that locks the guy out if he didn't show up yesterday, to where he can't go bid anything else or go mow anybody else's yards. Like, no, Mrs. Smith has been waiting since Tuesday. It's now Thursday. You're locked out of the app until you go mow Mrs. Smith. And I never in a million years would have thought we had to build that feature, but we had to, like, stop everything we were doing and just work on that feature set. So to your point, it's when you're inventing a new product and you're an entrepreneur, you have to, like, have this vision. Then that's static. Usually the big vision is static, but the path and the way you get there is iterative, and you have to be willing to do that. And you have to be willing to go from, like, failure to failure without a loss of enthusiasm while celebrating really little small wins along the way.
Yeah, I particularly enjoy hearing the way that you talk about, like, year one, year two. It's something we haven't talked about yet in this episode is timeline. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, year one, two, three, and four were really, really tough. We set a goal the first year. We just wanted to do 100 transactions in a week, and we didn't hit it. And you got, mind you, I had just sold a business that was doing thousands a day. and so now I'm trying to reinvent the lawn mowing business with this crappy app. At the time was crappy. Now I'm pretty proud of it, but back then it was crappy. And we ended the first year, we only hit like 56 transactions in a week, and half of them were my friends and family. So that was like a big punch in the gut. But we kept talking to users, we kept talking to customers, and the one thing we never heard from them was like, I don't need this. Nobody ever told us that. Nobody ever said, I don't need this. They always, like, were pissed off about things that didn't work and stuff they wished it would do. But we knew that, like, if we just kept working on those things, eventually we'd have a business. And then the other thing too is, we knew if we could just keep doubling these small numbers, we'd eventually have a business. And so the first year we ended like $10,000 in total revenue. And we're like, well, we just need to be able to double that. And if we could double it again and again and again, we might have a company. And so that's what we focused on. We focused on two things: doubling revenue every year and doubling the amount of transactions we were doing on a weekly basis. Because I think I think when you're running a business, doesn't matter how small or big or tech or traditional, you really need to like focus on one metric that matters. And for us, like the active metric that really gave us insight if the business was doing well or not was how many transactions did you do last week and did you do more this week? And if we could double that every year, then we could have a real company. And so year two and three, you know, those numbers were really small, but year four and five, it started to pick up some steam. And it wasn't until like on a Saturday, maybe year three, that I really understood that this thing was going to work. It was a Saturday. My two co-founders and I were working, and we worked 6-7 days a week the first 5 years. Something like 100 people signed up in a day, and I didn't know any of them. So that was a big deal. I was like, wow, I'm bending the world to my way. You know, it's like 100 people, and I don't know any of these people. Now thousands a day sign up, but that was an indication that we might be on the right track.
Yeah, I remember that feeling all too well, because you're right. Up front, friends and family, it's incredible how they support us. But the first time that I got a sale from a complete stranger in Romania, I was like, this is a business. I've done it. I've cracked the code.
And I love that. Yeah, you got to hit up friends and family in the early days, not because you need their money. You need their feedback. I need you to use this thing. I know it sucks, but I need you to know. I need you to tell me where I need to work, what I need to improve on. And so, yeah, we definitely leverage all of that.
Heck yeah. So walk us through that, because it sounds to me like you're bringing such memories back from my earlier entrepreneurial journey as to like the first day that my website had 1,000 visitors back when I was running my soccer blog. And it's a huge spike compared to like my 40 a day. And so that was a huge breakthrough for me. Talk to me about some of the moments that you look back and you say, that's something either we did right, or that's where we got a lucky break because we were in the game. And that is something that made all the difference for us.
Yeah. You know, been at this one for 8 years and really 20 years in business. I think like, you know, business is like a chess game, and there's no one move that wins the game. It's always a buildup. It's always a series of things that you're doing right day in, day out, and little 1% and 2% and 5% and 10% gains. And that's certainly been the case with GreenPal. There was never like an inflection point for us where it was just, we just took off and it was like a hockey stick. It's always been a slow, like 20-mile march. And, you know, to use American football as an example, we're not taking long passes downfield. It's just 2 and 3 yards at a time. And so, but out of that journey does like these little glimmers pop up. And one was that Saturday when 100 people signed up. Another was when we had launched our second market after year four. We spent 3 years just in Nashville trying to get consistency behind the product. But in year four, we launched Tampa, Florida. And it was working. It was working. And I thought, okay, yeah, no, we've got like 10 service providers in Tampa, and one of them is making really good money. When we launched the market, I met with everybody down there because I knew we had to get it right. And this guy was only doing 5 lawns a week. And after like 3 months, we were able to get him 100. And that was a moment where I was like, wow, we could do this for a lot of lawn care services throughout the entire country. We can help them make a real business and help them make material income on top of the platform we've built. And that was then and always has been our why we get out of bed in the morning is trying to help these small solopreneurs in the lawn mowing business make money. But that was the first like evidence of it that I saw. And that was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to see that. Interesting side story. This was 2014. That guy was a little weird, and he bought a bunch of Bitcoin, and now he's worth like $10 or $20 million. I still talk to him. It's hilarious. And it was GreenPal money. It was GreenPal money that gave him the seed money to do that. Now he's got more money than all of us.
I love that story. Definitely not what I expected. So he truly turned a lawn mowing empire into tens of millions of dollars.
I was thinking about him the other day. Yeah, that's awesome. And it was the money he made off of GreenPal that he was smart enough to reinvest in Bitcoin. He was trying to get me to do it. He's like, I'm telling you, fake money? What are you talking about? So funny.
That's incredible. So I want to address, because I know that if I was a listener of Entrepreneur to Entrepreneur and I'm sitting there and I'm saying, all right, Brian, you're telling me you're scrappy, you're gritty, you were going door to door, you were manually calling people from Craigslist on Sunday afternoons. How do you go from that to over 100,000 active users? Plug that gap for us, because obviously as you grew, your actions and your ability to scale became much bigger. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. We're now over 200,000 people using it. And, you know, I don't think the scrappiness never leaves. You just got to be scrappy in different ways. And so it's like, again, moving your way through the levels metaphorically. And so in the early days, you're scrappy because you're passing out door flyers and you're trying to get people to use it. And then you're scrappy because you're hitting them all up to meet you in Starbucks to talk about what they liked and what they didn't like. And then you're scrappy because instead of going out on the weekend, you're reading SEO blogs and you're trying to learn how to make SEO a channel because you don't want to pass out door flyers anymore. And then you got to learn this other thing. You got to learn how to like do A/B testing and conversion rate optimization and learn about data science. You know, even though you never had an interest in data science, now you do because you're scrappy. And that scrappiness just kind of carries on all the way to, like, you know, now we're eight figures, you know, 27 people working for the business, all of them smarter than me in some way. But it's because I've done a little bit of what all of them have done or what they're doing, I can kind of like lead and delegate to them better. And that scrappiness never leaves. Like I'm still, you know, even today, you know, one thing that we do is PR is a big channel for us. And I'm still pitching journalists, you know, still talking to journalists, still doing things like where the rubber meets the road to drive the business forward. So I don't think the scrappiness ever leaves. It just gets applied to different things. Like maybe you're reading a book or watching some stuff on YouTube or listening to a podcast you never would have done. But because you're a scrappy entrepreneur, you know you got to get to the next level of the game, and that scrappiness is what's going to get you there.
Yeah, really good answer. Brian, it made me think of something that I've actually never asked a podcast guest, so I'm excited to ask it to you. As we come towards the tail end of the interview, I want to squeeze in two more questions to you. And here's the first one, which I've never asked before, because I get into this conversation all the time with entrepreneurs and beginner entrepreneurs. And you've already mentioned, I think you kind of planted the seed earlier in the episode, where you said there's so many interesting entrepreneurial dichotomies. And from my perspective, one of those is this weird dichotomy where upfront, you want to make money, but by not chasing money as your final goal, you ultimately make more money. Talk to us about how that dichotomy has played out at different stages of your business's growth.
Yeah, it's a great question. It's like I heard you hear the quote, like the hallmark of a brilliant mind is the ability to hold two conflicting ideas in your head at the same time. And entrepreneurship surely causes you to do that. And so I think you have to have both. Like we would all be lying if we didn't say we weren't motivated monetarily in some way. Maybe there's some that aren't, but I certainly am. I mean, that's what caused me to mow my first yard. You know, that's what gave me the ambition to grow this thing and, you know, grow that company to eight figures. And now GreenPal, you know, our goals are in many ways revenue based. And so it's like, if you're going to say, oh, no, we don't care about the money, we're doing it for some altruistic thing, it's like, I don't think you're being honest. So that's important. You got to have a profitable concern that is making money, because then you can reinvest that money to make more money and create more opportunities for your stakeholders and your employees and the people that use your products. And so that's important. On the other hand, it can't all be about the money. You gotta have like your business. You know, people say follow your passion, and you'll never work a day in your life. You know, I think you need to replace passion with purpose, and I think your business can be the source of purpose for you in your life. It can be the reason you get out of bed in the morning. It can be the reason why you're leveling up. It can be the reason why it matters for you to do the things every day that you don't necessarily want to do. And so it's like the business can be the purpose. Yeah, sure, let's make money, but let's also have a purpose behind it. And I think you can do both. You can have both. It's not or, it's and. And I believe that if you're doing business right every 3 to 5 years, you should evolve completely as a different person. New things you've learned, wisdom you've gained, humility you've gained. Growing a business is one of the most humbling things you can do with your life. And so that's one of the beautiful things about it. And for me, that's been like my businesses have always been the source of purpose in my life. So it's, yeah, let's get this money, but it's also like this business is my purpose.
So in full transparency to every single one of you who's listening, before Brian and I hit record today, he said one clear thing to me. He said, Brian, I want to be one of the top 10 guests that you've ever had on the Entrepreneur to Entrepreneur podcast. And we're 450 episodes in. And Brian, I can safely tell you that is one of the top 5 answers that we've heard here on this podcast. So I love that.
I'll take it. You made my day.
So the last question I want to squeeze in there before we drop all your information so people can follow you, because clearly you're a wealth of knowledge, is people on the Entrepreneur to Entrepreneur podcast love hearing about marketing. And I think out of all the guests we've brought on, you've probably done all of the things with regards to marketing. You've already mentioned PR, SEO, everything, knocking on doors, meeting people at Starbucks, all of those things. What have you found? And obviously this is unique to you and your businesses, so everyone should test for themselves. What have you found to be your winning marketing channels?
Yeah, first, it's not enough to innovate on product and solving a problem. You have to innovate on marketing and growth also. And so a lot of times I see this with fellow entrepreneurs. I do a little bit of coaching and mentoring in Nashville for free as a hobby. And I see this a lot where it's like, I have this great product idea. And then we'll just sprinkle marketing on top at the end. And it doesn't work that way. Marketing's got to be like embedded in the DNA of the company, of what it is you're trying to do from the ground up. Because that's just what it takes to compete. That's what it takes to win. And so for us, like, you know, we tested 4, 5, 6, 7 channels early on. And one of the things we were getting out of our customer interviews was, you know, how do you normally find a lawn mowing service? And people would tell us, well, you know, after friends and family recommendations and whatnot, I would just search on Google out of desperation. And so that was a key insight for us that maybe Google is something that we need to like throw our weight into, and not just Google AdWords. I mean, like organic SEO. And after testing a bunch of different channels, we bet the company on that one channel. And so the answer is not SEO is the best strategy. The answer is test and figure out what's working and then bet the company on one, because you're not going to be the best Instagram marketer and the best Facebook marketer and the best Google organic search marketer at the same time if you're just getting started. You really got to focus on one and allocate it half of whatever the output of your business is into being the best in that one channel, because that's what it takes to win and that's what it takes to compete. And if you don't figure out this marketing engine in your business, then it's never going to go anywhere and you're always going to be self-employed. But if you can figure out like a flywheel, a marketing engine at the core of the business, that's what gets you to 7 and 8 figures and hopefully beyond.
Really incredible, strategic, real life, and no BS advice. Brian, I've loved every single second of our interview here today. Where the heck can listeners find more about you, follow everything that you're up to?
Yeah, anybody listening to this doesn't want to waste time cutting your grass. Maybe you want to focus more on your SEO strategy. Download GreenPal in the App Store or Play Store. You'll get hooked up with a great lawn mowing service in less than a minute. Anybody wants to reach out to me, I hang out the most on LinkedIn and Instagram. So you can hit me up on either of those places.
All right. Awesome. Brian, thank you so much for coming here on the Entrepreneur to Entrepreneur podcast.
Brian, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur to Entrepreneur podcast with your host, Brian Lofermento. For show notes and to get a free copy of Brian's book, visit us online at theentrepreneurshow.com.